Good evening, everybody. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for December 7th, 2023. And just a little forewarning here. I'm going to be doing a show here on the Christmas star coming up, just to give a little bit of history on this topic. Let's go back to the 2000s. I was doing this kind of on an annual basis, and I would do interviews, radio shows. And then finally, around 2010, I really kind of solidified all the thought concepts, etc., on this. And it's a controversial topic, because what happens is standard science needs some kind of explanation. You can't deny it. It's such a big story. I mean, it's such a big part of Christ's life. You know, the things in the heavens, the sign on which he was born, the end day prophecies. I talked about that. I talked the last few weeks. I've been talking about physics in the Bible, and you know, the different events that took place and how you explain them with physics. And actually, I'm going to go into this a little bit tonight, as if these events, like say Moses leaving Egypt, is explained by a passing comet, then the question becomes, did God have something to do with this? And so anyway, in my own life, I can tell you that I put a lot of things up to the divine creator, and I say, just handle this situation for me. It's like I can't manage all of these hundreds of things I do in my lifetime and on a daily basis, literally, to manage everything. And so anyway, these things get taken care of. And so Christ talks about this too in his teachings. He says, you know, the divine creator takes care of the birds in the heavens. They don't worry about where their next you know, meal is going to come from. The that is provided for them, you know. And the Native Americans, for example, the indigenous people, thought the same thing. They had the very same concept that God was providing for them, and when they would eat or something like that, they would always give thanks, because they knew that this was given to them. You know, they, even if they worked hard to raise plants, agriculture, that it was something that was a gift. Or cedar, for example, a tree was a gift because it split easy, it would not rot, it was very resilient, it was flexible. They could build many things out of a cedar tree. Or so anyway, it was a gift from the gods, and the Greeks believed in this too. In fact, the ancient Greeks believed that a lot of the things that happened to them were caused by what they called the fates. And the fates could be against you, or they could be for you. Just the human endeavor. So that it sets humans aside from physical things, like you say, could take a star, or the sun or the moon or something like that. These are governed by physical principles. And they're not, they don't have a free will to change. The moon does not have a free will to change its orbit. It's going to be in its orbit. It's going to show the same side to us. And there are physical reasons for that. So the physics of the solar system, of the universe, etc., or of events that happen with humans mixed in, like they say a comet, big comet passing by, these are physical events that man cannot change. But then also, then Christ talks about you will move mountains. And just like people back in his day, well, how can you move a mountain? That's crazy. Well, people do move mountains today, entire mountains. And there are ways to do it that's been done. But the people back then couldn't imagine moving a mountain. But back to the Greeks, for example, their concept of fates, that these things would happen to people or groups of people or a whole nation, and the rise and fall of nations, and etc., and the mixture of personalities. For example, let's take Xerxes. Xerxes was a leader of the Persians, and they came in and they did a lot of damage to the Greeks. But finally, the Greeks says, "Okay, in spite of the because the Persians had this technique, which was common, like in Rome, etc., is they would conquer an area and then they would take all the young guys and make them into soldiers on their side. So then, when they went to conquer the next neighbor, what used to be neighborhood tribes that may have been warring against each other, or maybe not." All of a sudden, the guys that were mixed in with the Romans now were fierce fighters because they had all of the training, all of the equipment, and all the strategy, etc., of the Romans. So the Romans just expanded out, and that was the same way with Xerxes. As they expanded out and they expanded the Persian Empire, it was like this formidable force that could not be stopped. But then the Greeks said, "Okay, enough of this," and it took them a long time, but they came back and overcame Xerxes and the Persians and drove them back out of Greece. And so anyway, this is the kind of the personality of man, of the human endeavor, of the human civilizations reacting, responding, and taking control of their situation. So anyway, what does this have to do with this Christmas star thing? Well, a star is the thing up in the heavens. A star is the thing that's a physical thing up in the sky. And of course, back in those days, the wise men didn't know that they thought that this was in the firmament, but they saw it as a sign from heaven. Something that would, and they, went to great lengths to take their gifts and cross very, very perilous lands to get to where Christ was, and the star stopped above, and this was all predicted. So but the idea of a star, something up in the sky having something to do with human events. So did God put this star there? Was this a special thing, some kind of sign? Or was this related to, like we might, I've talked about this in my comet work, dealing with the electrical nature of comets. When you have a great big comet come into the solar system, it can be used because of the discharge of the solar capacitor. It can be used to brake, like aerobraking atmospheres are used for aerobraking. The electrical current and related magnetic field can be used by incoming aliens to brake, to slow down a spacecraft coming in at hypervelocity from outer space. And so could that be somehow related to the appearance of Christ? Or was this related to, I mean, all of these things, and that's why we call these mysteries, because we can guess and make wild guesses, and as in this case, as to what was going on. But it was like back in the day of Christ, he said, "You will move mountains." Humans will move mountains, which is true. It eventually came true, but they didn't understand it back in that day, and we still don't understand a lot about the situation with the Christmas star. But the crux of the issue of the Christmas star is that it was no doubt a comet, a very, very unusual comet that spent years up in the sky. It spent literally years up in the sky because that's how long it took these magi to formulate their trip, to pack, to travel. They met along the way. They visited with Herod. This thing. Herod saw it up in the sky. I talked about this last week and 2 weeks ago. But anyway, the Christmas star is an event. It's a celestial event, but coordinated with things on Earth. So, in our human kind of way of looking at things, a scientist would say, "Well, it was a comet. It was a novelty item. It was a fluke. It was a coincidence. Just happened to be this thing up in the sky." But most scientists would call it a say that the Christmas star was a planetary alignment. Which is totally bogus because planetary alignments only last a few hours. Whether they're visual, whether they're real alignments or not, is they only last a few hours and then they're gone. So it's not something that would have lasted for years that they would have followed, discovered in the east, and then followed to the west for a number of years. So anyway, I'll be talking more about the Christmas star. But just going back a little bit about the history of my developing this, then I had, if you remember, I used to have interviews with Brad Walton. Brad passed away a number of years ago, unfortunately. Good friend, amazing person, very interesting, top talk show host in the country. He was on typically late night radio and competed with Coast to Coast AM. I talked about when I was doing a Coast to Coast AM radio show at night, and Brad wanted me to do a show on the same night. So he agreed, and I pre-recorded with Brad Walton, and that aired nationwide, a radio show. And then I was also on Coast to Coast AM live with George Norrie. So anyway, it was interesting. People would call up. They say, no matter what channel I turn to, you're on a radio interview. But back in the good old days, I've slowed a lot down on doing interviews recently. Speaking of interviews, tonight I will be on with Jeff Rentz. If you're staying up in a few hours, just a few hours from now, I'll be on with Jeff Rentz. In fact, this show starts at 6 p.m. Central Time. My 1 hour with Jeff, the first Thursday of every month, starts at 9 p.m. Central. So listen in on Jeff Rentz tonight. We'll be talking about some very interesting topics, very specialized topics. And then, of course, I'm always guest with John Moore Wednesday mornings, like yesterday morning. I was a guest with John, and that was a very good show. We just started talking about Nazca lines and many interesting topics, and then so we had some callers call in, very interesting questions. But I don't do lots and lots of interviews anymore. I might start again in the near future, but my time has been taken up with other things, just busy work somewhat. But I'll get back to doing more interviews here probably after the first of the year. I've had a lot of people calling me to be on interviews before Christmas, and I turned down quite a few, just saying, no, I'm going to rest. I'm going to take it easy. But it's not like I'm sitting there with my feet up. I got a lot going on. Okay, so anyway, back to the idea of these Christmas star lectures. So going back in time, I did a series of lectures, and then I coordinated this into an actual show, a couple of shows, and then I did a couple of my shows back in the November, December 2010 time frame. So if you go back into my archives into that time frame, November, December 2010, you can pick up on that show. And I don't have the exact date here of that show. It's November or December 2010. And you can listen to the first minute or two of those shows, and I'll be talking about, oh, this show is going to be about the Christmas star. But now what I'm doing is I'm advancing some of that information, and I'll be talking about some things I've never talked about before relative to the Christmas star, which, like I say, was definitely a comet. Okay, so I'll leave that topic. And I've got some other very interesting projects, things that are very different for me. And I won't talk about them on the air just when they come out. It's going to be rather fun things to do, rather fun things to do. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here a little bit. I'm going to talk about water filtration just a little bit, just to remind you. And of course, if you've been listening to this show at all, you know I have a product line of water filters. But there's actually, I mentioned I'm going to be on Jeff Rentz tonight in a couple hours. What we're going to be talking about is some of the anticipation for those of you who are living in the United States. Regarding just let's say things are ripe for another like 9/11 type of event, but that the sentiment is amongst people who study and follow these things is that, like if you say 9/11, it may not happen in New York City. It didn't really affect directly, although the aftermath affected people everywhere, with the Patriot Act and everything that followed, all of the hyper security and everything that went with it. But, physically, it only affected a very minute pinpoint in New York City. Although it affected, if you were affected in literally physically, then, but you were in the vast minority. It only directly affected physically. I'm not talking about psychologically or somebody that had a relative there or something. I'm talking directly affecting, like you were there type of thing. And so the next event, which they're going to have to pull to stop the next election, to cure what's going on in the Mid East, etc., to switch gears, so to speak, to get the heat of everything else that's going on, they would have to pull another event, another false flag event. But this time it would be more, it would be something that it would affect more of the public. And of course, you can say, well, that was COVID-19 and the shot and everything else, the vaccination and everything else that went with it. But not in a shock form, like an explosion or something. And so that's what the people who are, like I say, study this. And I kind of do. I don't talk about it. I used to talk about it a lot more, but I don't anymore. I really don't discuss it anymore. But the end result is that you are going to need fresh water. It's the very first thing you need when the lights go out. It's the very last thing you need. It's still something you need when the lights come back on, if they come back on. And so who knows what they might pull out of the rabbit hat. There's 100 different tricks that these people have up their sleeves that they could pull and have the news media roll out and go run with it. And just like 9/11, where the pre-scripted responses were all there. This was high dollar advertising, Hollywood type of promotion coming on the heels of 9/11, the same way with COVID, the same way with everything. Remember that, for example, just a little story when my dad, I don't talk about people who are alive on my show or in public in general. My dad, of course, passed away quite a while ago. But he told a story about when he was growing up in a little farm in Western, out in the Western Plains, and near a little town, maybe 15 miles out in the country, out of this little town. And the news came across the radio that Pearl Harbor had happened, the attack, Japanese attacked Pearl Harbor. And by the time he got into town that same day, the tables were all lined up. The band was playing, everybody was hyped up, and they were going to go get the Japanese. That day, when previously, the day before, there was very little interest in the United States to go to war, either in Europe or in the Japanese, the Pacific, whatever. And of course, the Japanese were involved in expansionism into China, into the Philippines, etc. But the Pearl Harbor event came as a total surprise to pretty much everybody. They didn't expect Japan to make a physical, like this bombing raid in and, destroy all these ships. But the point is that by that afternoon, they already had the table set up, the band was playing, all of this was pre-scripted to get these things into place, and every young man was there signing up. They were gonna, sign up for the military. That day, 1 million men across the United States signed up for the military. Like bang, it was just that fast, and that just shows you, and we know in retrospect that the president knew about that, the a lot of people knew that that was coming, and it was being the issues was being forced to force Japan into an attack situation, and they actually knew the day and the time and everything. But to the general public, it was a total surprise, and then they, of course, used that to their advantage. The people running the shows, same people as today, different names, different faces, but basically the same people, the same families, to manipulate, to use that event to manipulate what they wanted, and that was a world war, with the United States heavily involved in the mechanizing the war and building, military equipment and creating a balance of power where Hitler had moved out of the balance of power that the bankers controlled. And you may say good, bad things, whatever, about everything that happened in World War II, but that is exactly the scenario that they needed the United States because Britain couldn't beat Germany. No way. They were going to be pounded, invaded, and of course there's the story about the 13 hours about how the Spitfires went up in waves, and they had the advantage of radar, which was key to the whole thing. They knew when the Germans were coming across the channel, and how many, and where to go. And the Spitfires went up and ferociously attacked them, so they really didn't have much effect as far as bombing was concerned. The German pilots were really harassed and were very unsuccessful. But that could have changed overnight. And in the long term, Germany probably would have developed a strategy that, and that's, of course, who can second guess history? History has proven otherwise. But in the long term, England was an island. It depended on trade and naval shipping for its survival. And if Germany could cut that off, which they could have with their U-boats, they would have basically starved England out because the grain, the raw materials, the petroleum, everything else that came into England from around the world would have been cut off. Eventually, the Germans would have squeezed them. So they needed the United States in World War II, and that was the ticket to get into World War II in a big way. But back to the original topic, which was talking about events that are planned to get a reaction from the public, and then the news media following up. But then, in the case of what people are talking about, not myself, but like I say, other people who are studying these issues, that it's going to affect a lot of people physically. And that might not be in terms of, punching in the face or that type of physical, but it might be in the terms of, say, doing something to water systems. And that has been discussed a lot recently by various people. But the point is, ask yourself the question, are you water independent? Do you have some kind of a system that's going to filter out organic chemicals out of the water? And if you don't, then you should maybe make some preparations really quickly to get that in place. And it can be very quickly, in a matter of a week from the time you order, you could have it up and set up and running. Because we have everything in stock that's listed on the web page and ready to ship. So the goal for right now, and then, by the way, if you're looking at presents, what better present could you get for somebody than a gift of water independence? I mean, in this day and age. So anyway, I'm not going to talk more about the products because the web page does a very good job of that. The web page, jmccwaterfilters.com. Once again, jmccwaterfilters.com. And typically I refer to this as a commercial-free show. But that's what pays the bills, because I don't have sponsors, I don't have government grants, I don't have people sending me money. You can send me a little bit of money on my Patreon channel, which is linked from my webpage. If you go to the main webpage, jmccsci.com, there's a link there to my Patreon channel where you can listen to my archives every week. And of course, you can get those on my webpage for free, but a little bit of a bonus where people get an email as soon as they're posted, and then they get to go listen to the show. So, and it's a way of people that believe in my work to do a little contribution on a monthly basis. So anyway, that's available on my webpage, jmccsci.com. Okay, so if you want to call that a commercial, that's the extent of my commercials. And I don't do that very often, just a reminder. Thank you. Any help is appreciated, because as any of these talk shows know, there's a lot of expenses that go along with being here every week. And that it gets paid for out of the little bit of money that comes in through the businesses. And actually, you get something in return. Okay, so tonight I want to talk about a rather esoteric topic. And here's how it works. Here's how it works. Let's go back to the ancient Greeks and what they called the Fates. They viewed the gods on Olympus. The gods lived, remember, on Olympus, the mountain off of Greece, the volcanic mountain, and was active with the gods. And of course, the gods were jealous of humans. This was one a main aspect of their list of deities. But the gods were jealous of humans because humans had bodies. They could experience pain and pleasure and feelings, and whereas the gods couldn't. They didn't have the body associated with their spirit. So they were jealous of people, of humans. And they tried to, they were caught up in emotions, well, relative to humans, sometimes falling in love with them and sometimes hating them to the point of causing huge amounts of problems, or getting them, say, after they died. There's the story, was it Sisyphus, who was a king on earth, and he had a beautiful wife, and he had a beautiful kingdom, and everything was good. And I don't remember how he died. He met a very early demise, and he goes down to the gates of Hades, where the souls would reside for eternity. So they had this concept of the soul and eternity and etc. Where, and so he goes down to the gates, and there was a gatekeeper there, and he made a bargain. He made a bargain. And he said, "Look, I've got this beautiful wife. I just want to go back and see her one time, and then I'll come back and serve my eternity here in Hades." So anyway, they grant him this wish, because he was like this special character, a king, royalty. And I might not have this story 100% correct if you're a Greek mythology buff, but anyway, so he goes back to see his beautiful wife, and he decides he's not going to go back to Hades. He's not going to go with this death thing. So anyway, he runs away with his wife, and he hides, and he lives out the rest of his life in hiding. Of course, has to relinquish his kingdom, and where he would be found easily. So he goes into hiding, but then when he finally does die, the real time, that ultimately goes down to the gates of Hades, and woo, he is not met with a good rapport. Let's put that way. He was, had an agreement, and agreements, by the way, were very highly held. You were a person of your word, a person in the Greek mythology. But anyway, so when he goes back down to Hades, he's not, well, welcomed. Let's just put it that way. So they give him a sentence, an eternity sentence, and what it is he has to roll.